The last case set for argument this morning is Anderson Industries versus Thermal Intelligence. Tatum O'Brien is arguing on behalf of the appellant Thermal Intelligence, and Jonathan Heber will be arguing on behalf of Appley Anderson Industries. So, Ms. O'Brien, you may proceed with your argument at this time.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. As Chief Justice indicated, my name is Tatum O'Brien, and I represent the appellant in this case, Thermal Industries. We are here today to ask this court to reverse and remand the circuit court's ruling that incorrectly found that summary judgment was appropriate and incorrectly found that there were issues of fact, or there were no issues of material fact in this case. As I'm sure this court is aware, this court reviews this case de novo, and that all inferences should be given to the appellant or the non-movement in this case. I think that it's important to get back to the summary of facts in this case. My client was a Canadian company that had become a business ventures with this company in South Dakota, Anderson Industries. So initially, in early 2019, the plan was to develop these industrial heaters that they were going to be used in the oil field. So the companies got together and came up with these 1.0 version heaters. My clients were agreed to purchase 30 of them. They bought the 30 heaters from Anderson Industries, and my clients were dissatisfied with the amount of heat production that was coming out of these heaters. My clients, however, were interested in continuing to develop the intellectual property that was involved with these heaters and wanted to continue to explore the relationship with Anderson Industries. However, unfortunately, Anderson Industries had already purchased, instead of purchasing the materials for the 30 heaters that my client had agreed to purchase in early 2019, they actually went ahead and purchased the materials for 60 heaters.
But that wasn't your client's fault.
That was not my client's fault.
Okay.
And so my clients were interested in continuing the relationship. However, Anderson was under a bit of a financial strain and concerns about having these 1.0 version heaters that my client no longer wanted because they didn't produce enough heat. So in approximately July of 2019, the parties get together and are trying to find a way to make this all work because my clients are very interested in continuing this venture with Anderson Industries, but Anderson Industries cannot make this relationship work without getting rid of these 30 heaters that it has already purchased. So the parties in July of 2019 had exchanged a bunch of emails because my client is a Canadian company about how to make this things work. So they come up with a sort of proposal, a plan of how we can make these heaters into a version 1.5 heater, and my clients could use those heaters and get them to their customers while developing versions 1.7 and 2.0 of the heater, all while continuing to make a plan where my client, Thermal Industries, is going to take over the intellectual property and make these heaters sort of their own.
So getting rid of the inventory, which is what they call it, getting rid of the inventory of the components for the remaining 30, they bought enough for 60, they sold 31.0s, and the deal you're talking about is the 1.5s. Actually, to build those, they just had the
modify them.
Just had the gear for the apps. They had to build them. So would you agree that that understanding of, hey, these additional 30, they got to go before we go anywhere else? Yes?
Yes. I believe that was in my client's deposition. That was part of the ongoing general plan between the parties.
Without it, they weren't going anywhere. Fair also?
I would say that was, I don't know that was fair. My client said that was the target that they were going. However, they needed to have all of these other components in place.
Is there anything in the record that says or suggests that your client thought they could dispense with buying the 30 extra ones and still have a future with Anderson? Or was it, as I thought you just said, they have to get rid of these 30 extra ones before anybody, either party, has any hope of moving forward with this relationship?
Well, I think that your point is excellent, Your Honor, because that is the whole problem in this case, is that this court, not this court, the circuit court, looked at this July 2019 email in a vacuum. It didn't look at any of the other emails between the parties ongoing throughout the time. These parties were in an ongoing negotiation and trying to figure out how to make this all work.
But maybe there wasn't an agreement on the other terms, but they said, we just need to get rid of these 30. We'll kick the rest of it down the road for a little bit, and let's just get rid of these 30 and then see what happens. And in fact, your client then wound up buying most of the 30. And so there's performance and there's all these other things. So something happened with respect to those 30. What was that?
That is the question. And that is why I'm asking this court to reverse the underlying court and let us try this case, because there was understanding in emails between the other parties where Anderson Industries is saying, you need to get rid of these 30s, otherwise we can't make this deal and go forward. And my client's saying, okay, well, I hear you, but we need product development, we need warranty, we need a staff to make these heaters work. And in order to make this a go, we'll give you the money, like start this process, but then we need to figure this other stuff out.
Are the heaters goods?
Sorry, Your Honor.
No, it's okay.
Yes, the heaters are goods.
Does the Uniform Commercial Code, as it's been enacted in South Dakota, apply?
Your Honor, we didn't brief specifically a lot of the issue of the...
You didn't cite the UCC at all. That's why I'm asking.
Right. And that is a good question, but it wasn't addressed in the underlying court, the summary judgment, and that's why I'm asking this court to reverse...
Mr. Haber, in his arguments to the circuit court, said, quote, this is a pretty simple UCC case. And he proceeded to make an argument about the UCC, which requires, among other things, a consumer, a customer, a contracting party to reject goods that are not conforming to what that customer wanted. And it doesn't look like there's rejection here.
Right. And we would suggest that there was a rejection because my client was having ongoing issues saying to Corey Anderson, we need help. We need support. These heaters aren't running.
But you didn't make that argument in your briefs. In other words, you didn't say, hey, this is rejection under the UCC. And there are cases that interpret the UCC from jurisdictions across the country because it is a uniform act. And we could maybe look at those. And complaining about the quality is good enough for rejection. That's
right.
Not in there. You haven't made that argument.
It is, Your Honor.
No, it's not under the UCC because you haven't cited the UCC. I hate to quarrel with you, but that is not cited in your brief.
We didn't cite the UCC and we didn't use the word rejection, but there was lots of evidence regarding the quality, functionality, and ability of those heaters to work. There were several emails that were submitted to the court where my client is saying, these heaters will not start. And you have Mr. Anderson saying, well, you know, John moved out of state and we can't get the parts. And, you know, Dan Ewert doesn't work here anymore. And that data that you're wondering and why we can't get the remote start to work, well, we don't know because I don't know anything about it and he doesn't work here anymore.
Section 2602 of the UCC, which we've enacted in our Title 57A, has rules for how you reject. And you can't, it's not enough to say, you've got to send it back. You've got to say, we're rejecting it. I'm sending it back. The facts in this case appear to be undisputed that your client didn't send them back and, in fact, kept buying more, warts and all.
Right. Well, and that was part of the problem, Your Honor, is my client accepted the first 17 on the plan that this 1.5 heater was going to get them through and they were going to buy the rest of the remaining to get to the 30 and continue to make this product work. All the while, they're not functioning and they're not working, and they're not getting any answers from Anderson Industries. Did they physically ship them back to South Dakota? No. But there is plenty of evidence in the record where these heaters are not running, they're not functioning, and they're not getting the answers that they need because Corey Anderson fired all of those employees, and they were no longer with Anderson Industries.
How does that suffice for rejection under the UCC?
Because that's an issue of fact, Your Honor. We would believe that it does suffice for rejection.
Well, but that's but let's flip that around a little bit. You received what, 17?
Yes.
And there's 13 or so sitting at Anderson.
Yes.
At some point in time, you said, we're not going to pay for any more of these. We've got all these issues out there. And a lot of that was, I think there were some email communications, but also some oral conversations, as I understand it.
Yes, that's correct.
Question of rejection is really a question of fact, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor, and that's why we're asking this court to reverse and remand, because all favorable inferences should be made towards my client. And the district court looked at that July email and said, you agreed to pay for 30, you didn't pay for 30, you paid for part of 30, you owe this much.
So under 56, we've got to look at, is there any genuine issue of material fact you've created that there was a rejection of those remaining goods?
Exactly, Your Honor. There was multiples of emails and phone calls and conversations between these parties that the circuit court completely ignored. The circuit court said there's no issues of fact as to any of these issues, and all we're asking this court to do is reverse and remand and give us a trial on all of these factual issues.
I'm sorry.
No, finish this line.
So I would note, I'm looking at your affirmative defenses in your answer. You do raise some UCC issues in there. And one of those, and this moves on, and I'm jumping in front of you, sorry, but to another topic, mitigation of damages. You raise that as an affirmative defense in this case.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you've argued the damages, and I'm not sure I understand your damages argument, but, you know, Anderson's got, what, 13 or however many heaters sitting at their place. They can sell those. I don't know if they've done that. I don't know if that came up, if that's in the record. What happened to those 13? But there's an obligation to mitigate those damages to the extent that they've still got some heaters sitting there that they can arguably sell, or maybe sell parts or whatever. Was that part of the case in terms of the discussion of damage? And I'm moving from breach to damages.
Right. That is correct, Your Honor. That was something else that we argued in our brief as well.
And is that in the record?
It is in the record, Your Honor, because there's an email that states that my client says to them directly, we don't want these heaters, and you can go ahead and sell them, do whatever you want with them. They're not ours. We don't want them. We can't use them. They don't work. And additionally, Your Honor,
that's after they had ended the relationship.
I think it was either right after or in the same email.
Same day, but it was after. It's like, we're not doing it anymore. So that wasn't during the course of their relationship.
Well, arguably was, Your Honor. It was in the same day. And that would be a factual issue for the court to explore. And that's why we're asking for this court to reverse and view those facts in the light most favorable to us, the non-movement.
Did you ever, did Thermal Intelligence ever say, we're sending them back?
No, Your Honor. I think that the costs that were involved in this case with my client was trying to keep Anderson Industries above board and try to keep this relationship going. But my client was going broke because their customers weren't paying them because these heaters weren't working. And so the cost of shipping these heaters all the way back to North Dakota didn't make sense when they weren't working, they weren't starting. And Anderson Industries has plain out said, we didn't have any use for these heaters.
So, you know, the question is, do we have a contract and do we have breach? If a contract was not formed, why did your client pay the deposits and accept delivery of the already completed units?
Well, Your Honor, that is a good question, because what our point is that either there wasn't an actual formed contract that they were working towards an agreement, which they hadn't gotten to yet, but they wanted to get this thing off the ground. And sorry, my mouth is dry. We all know that how seasons work in North Dakota and South Dakota and Canada, and they were working on a really tight timeline because this is August and July, and they needed to get these, they had 10-week production, So they needed to get these heaters off and running. So my clients and Anderson are working together towards an agreement, but they're not there yet. But my client knows because Anderson has told him, we already spent the money for these 1.0 heaters. We got to figure this out because otherwise we aren't going anywhere. And so my client kept putting money towards the agreement that wasn't quite made yet.
So you've also asked for a reversal and remand to a different judge. What's the basis for that request?
A reversal and remand we're asking it for to be reversed to from the summary judgment issue.
Yes. Yes. Are you asking for assignment to a different judge?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what is the basis for that?
Your Honor, the blatant disregard of all of the evidence that we presented, it was clearly not even considered by the trial court judge. And in that case, we feel that we wouldn't have a fair basis to go forward if he was our judge, considering all the evidence we put before him that was just completely disregarded.
So you think that the judge abdicated his role of neutrality such that he needs to be removed from the case because he made an error?
Yes, Your Honor.
Really? Any case that you can cite me to that would support that proposition?
No, Your Honor. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Heber, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, Chief Justice, counsel. My name is Jonathan Heber. I represent Anderson Industries, the appellee in this matter. First and foremost, thank you to the court, the law school, for the opportunity to present argument in this setting. I'd like to talk first about the summary judgment standard. The moving party for summary judgment was Anderson Industries in this case. It was cross motions, but for purposes of appeal, we're considering the motion for summary judgment of Anderson Industries. Anderson Industries has a burden to set forth facts and evidence and law demonstrating that there's no genuine issue of material fact. The non-moving party, Thermal Intelligence, also has a burden, and that burden is to set forth facts, probative evidence that would demonstrate that there are genuine issues of material fact to be tried by the trier of fact. And that evidence needs to be more than speculation, fantasy, or conjecture. It needs to be probative evidence, if believed, will create a tribal issue. And for this matter, and as the circuit court correctly noted, there was a lack of evidence supporting the opposition by Thermal Intelligence, whether that be a lack of any affidavit by Brian Tiedemann, the owner and president of Thermal Intelligence, or representatives of Thermal Intelligence, or having taken a deposition of Corey Anderson, that wasn't done. And in fact, the response to the statement of material facts is mostly bare and contains generic responses of simply denial. And that's a thematic for this case because at all turns in this case, there have been generic opposition to the agreement. Thermal Intelligence desperately doesn't want to pay. It terminated, canceled the agreement, anticipatorily repudiated it. It does not want to pay. And
Mr. Heber, I'm sorry, forgive me, but what sort of rules, principles, could you direct us to eliminate your argument that rejection requires and has certain requirements? In other words, is it enough to simply complain about the quality? And are there rules or principles that would remove that from the realm of just a, you know, factual dispute about who complained when and what they said? But are there actual rules that could guide us in sort of compartmentalizing that information to sort of say, yeah, this is what rejection looks like. This is the legal standard for rejection. Can you please give us those rules?
Yes, Your Honor. And that rule, to begin with, that we cited was SDCL 57A2602. That's the beginning point for considering whether or not there was rightful rejection. And subsection 1 says, rejection of goods must be within a reasonable time after the delivery or tender. It is ineffective unless the buyer seasonably notifies the seller. One of the principal points that Thermal Intelligence has made on appeal here is that there was a factual issue regarding the rejection. We would contend, and we believe the circuit court got it correctly, that there was no rightful rejection. And in fact, we know that because there's an email from Brian Tiedemann, the president and the owner of Thermal Intelligence, that states the reason for the canceling the agreement. I quote, it states, "I notified Corey on Friday that if the heater wasn't released, we would be terminating our relationship with Anderson, effective immediately. The heater was not released, so we have notified our customers that all remaining orders have been canceled." That was the basis for terminating. And that's important because what we have here is Thermal Intelligence actually wanted more heaters. It wasn't rejecting heaters. It wasn't rejecting the agreement. It wanted more heaters.
Is it enough to complain about the quality of the heaters? Would that affect rejection?
No.
Why not? If your answer is no, why not?
And no, Your Honor, it would not, because Thermal Intelligence would have needed to have actually rejected the heaters based on the quality. It would have had to have stated, we're rejecting, we're returning.
Does the statute actually require them to return in order for it to be an effective rejection?
They don't have to return it for it to be a rejection, but...
In fact, there was, in a sense, a rejection in that we got 13 heaters that you kept, right? You still got those. That's in the record.
Correct.
They didn't take them, and there's a dispute about why that happened and how that came about, but isn't that a fact question in terms of, is that considered a rejection? I mean, they certainly raised a number of issues with the quality. You agree with that? A number of issues with the quality of the heaters. They weren't working. We're getting customer complaints, those sorts of things. And they said, we're not going to pay anymore. Now, maybe it could have been said, hey, we're actually rejecting the rest of them. And I think it ultimately came to that because they said, we're not paying anymore. You said, we're not sending anymore. And so those, why is that not a fact question as to whether those remaining 13 were rejected?
The context of the agreement here was that these were custom-built heaters for Thermal Intelligence. They were just made for Thermal Intelligence. The technology was to create them for Thermal Intelligence. It went from the 1.0 to the 1.5. It bore their insignia and their logos. And the important thing to realize here is Thermal Intelligence never... They weren't the customer, the end customer. They had end customers that it was resold to. Those in the record, Thermal Intelligence has stated that none of them were returned by the customers. Not a single one of them were returned. So in terms of Thermal Intelligence putting forth, setting forth probative evidence in response to the statement, material fact or summary judgment, I would say it hasn't carried its burden. No affidavit.
Well, but those facts that I just represented, those are all in the record. Regardless of who put those in, you've got the initial burden to say, hey, there are no questions, there are no genuine issues of material fact. Give us summary judgment on there's a contract, which maybe there's no dispute about that. There was a breach, and we're entitled to the amount of damages we're claiming. No questions of fact. And so you've got that initial obligation, irrespective of what they put in. Would you agree?
I would agree. And again, I would state that the email where Brian Tiedemann, who is the owner and the president of Thermal Intelligence, he said, if the heater wasn't released, we would be terminating our relationship. That was the reason. That was the basis. It's never been controverted. It's never been stated that was inaccurate or incomplete. That was the basis for terminating. And at that point, communications then continue because Anderson Industries is rightfully upset. It's built, its manufacturers developed the IP, it's done everything. It's performed entirely on its part to create the heaters, and all 30 at that point are created, and it just needs to be paid.
Under the UCC, if they had sent a letter saying, we reject all of these because they do not work, would that have been an effective rejection under the UCC?
Might have been.
Well, would it have, why wouldn't it have been? Because you, I thought you acknowledged earlier they didn't necessarily have to return it. What's missing?
Well, I think...
If they say, I reject all of these, they don't work, they're defective. What else do they need to do?
in conjunction with
that. That would be that. I would agree that that would be what would start the rejection process. That didn't happen from our perspective, but I believe that the manufacturer then has a right to go back and try to conform and meet.
And one of the disputes in this case is whether there is a disputed fact about whether that happened. You said that didn't happen in this case. She says that did happen, that they rejected it. It seems like that possibly there's a disputed issue of fact that needs to be resolved on that. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I don't believe so, because I believe the record is clear on Thermal Intelligence wanting more heaters. It wasn't rejecting the heaters. It wanted more. In fact, it was there. It was ready to pick up.
So can you reject something that hasn't been delivered? Can you reject something that hasn't been delivered or tendered for delivery?
I think you can, Your Honor. I think you can go to the meeting place and say, we reject these. I think.
And what about the section that says, of our enactment, that says rejection of goods must be in a reasonable time after their delivery or tender? So not all these heaters went at one time. They went from time to time, right?
Your Honor.
They weren't. So we're talking about rejection of the heaters that were delivered, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And but after the point where number 17 stops, the contract ends, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But do you think the UCC contemplates that if I've ordered 1,000 items and I get the first 10 and they are pieces of crap, that I have to take the other 990 before I get to reject those 990?
Your Honor, I think that I do agree that the Thermal Intelligence would have the right to start the process for terminating the agreement based on rejection of goods. I don't believe that's happened here. I believe the record is clear for their basis for terminating. It wanted more. We know from Brian Tiedemann's testimony, we know from the record that Thermal Intelligence was having liquidity problems. It's why it entered into the payment plan. It's why it proposed the payment plan.
Counsel, I would like to move your attention to the payment schedule. And I'm going to ask you whether or not there's a disputed issue of material fact. Thermal states that the payment schedule was proposed to provide Anderson with consistent cash flow to allow them to continue operating, whereas you state that this was a payment on a contract for the heaters. Is that a genuine issue of material fact? I mean, this a significant amount of money is exchanged hands here, and it seems to me that there may be genuine issues of material fact, or all of this has been resolved on summary judgment. This is a 376-page record. And so does that payment schedule, is that a genuine issue of material fact regarding what was the purpose of the payment schedule? Was it to give you operating cash, or was it payment on a contract?
Your Honor, it was payment on a contract, and the emails go back and forth about creating that payment schedule. The UCC would indicate that it doesn't need to be defined when payment is made on a contract for goods. And if there's no agreement, it's typically at the time of delivery. However, the parties can agree to a payment schedule. This contract was based on deposits to get the lead time in order to create the heaters, develop the IP and get them ready, and then thereafter payments. The parties agreed on, well, in fact, Thermal Intelligence proposed the payment plan and it didn't meet the payment plan. Those payments were applied towards the contract, were expected to be applied towards it. That was the purpose. And Thermal Intelligence hasn't asserted anything into the record whatsoever, affidavit or testimony or anything under oath to suggest otherwise.
So I want to move past breach and go to damages for a minute. That's one of the issues in the case. There's about, what, half of what was owed under the contract that was paid, about $1.1 million, something like that. About a little over half of the heaters were delivered. The other 13 you've still got there. And, you know, I want to talk particularly about mitigation of damages. There's an affirmative defense for that. Plaintiff defendant has raised that. They've talked about Section 703 to 710, the UCC, that talks about the damages. And essentially, a number of those talk about mitigation and the obligation that a seller has to mitigate their damages. And 708 talks about less expenses saved. There seems to be pretty clear evidence in the record that there's 13 heaters sitting there. Apparently, they haven't been sold. There's no determination of what those are worth or what those parts are worth if they're, you know, not valuable as heaters themselves. Doesn't that create some questions of fact on damages and your obligation as a seller, rather than just coming in and saying, well, this is what we wrote under the contract. Yeah, we've still got all these heaters. We're not putting any value on those, and so we're entitled to the full amount of the contract. Doesn't that create some questions of fact?
I would disagree that it creates a genuine issue of material fact in this case, and that's because the affirmative defense is thermal intelligence burden, and that was their burden to put forth evidence in the record to the circuit court and summary judgment.
But there is evidence in the record. We've got 13 heaters that are sitting at your place. I mean, it would be pretty evident that there's some value there.
So Corey Anderson, owner of Anderson Industries, submitted an affidavit in connection with the summary judgment and stated these were custom made. Anderson Industries is a manufacturer. It doesn't have the avenue for a secondary market or anything above completely nominal amount for parts, basically scrap metal, so to speak. And the most value it could have would be thermal intelligence. I don't believe that Anderson Industries is required to even keep it or store it, but it has for 5 years. And we didn't ask for that storage fees in connection with summary judgment.
Do you think mitigation wasn't raised on summary judgment?
I don't believe that evidence supported it. I don't believe that thermal intelligence carried its burden it presented no evidence as to what market Anderson Industries could have sold it to, what the value. It didn't go and inspect it. It knew right where the heaters were. It's sitting in Webster, South Dakota. It could go there and inspect it, and it's in the business for what these are worth. It has these heaters. It could do a valuation if it believed there was any value. That's thermal intelligence's burden. It didn't do that. It didn't do anything. There's no affidavit from Brian Tiedemann. There's no testimony. There's no expert.
Was there argument before the summary judgment court about mitigation?
It was briefed. As far as any evidence supporting it, I would say no.
Unless there's questions, looks like your time's up, Mr. Haber.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Ms. O'Brien, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think that Appelli's argument highlights all of the issues that I've brought up in this case, and that what Anderson Industries is urging this court to look at is two things and two things only. The July email that they indicate creates this, we will buy your 30 heaters for this amount price, that's our contract. They want you to look at that email in a vacuum, and then they want you to look at the November 18th email, just the one that says, we're done, you're not sending the other heater, we're done. What they're asking, or what the other court ignored, and what we're asking this court to reverse and remand on, is the multiple emails and deals between August, September, October, and November. Like, there are several emails in September where my clients are saying, these heaters aren't working, we're not getting a hold of anybody, where's Danny Work? Where's the data? How come we can't remote start these? Where are the parts? Oh, the part man moved to Nebraska and he has a different job now. Well, right, so November is coming and going and it's getting colder and we still have non-functioning heaters. My clients have agreed to take and pay for these 17 heaters. The 13 haven't arrived yet, and we have non-functioning heaters in November in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Canada. And this is not working. It's not acceptable. And that is the whole issue here, Your Honors, is they're saying we didn't reject, that we didn't appropriately, do all of these things. We didn't submit an affidavit. We submitted tons of evidence. The record is replete with all of these issues that my clients were having. And they want this court to look at this and just simply say, you agreed to buy 30 heaters. You didn't pay us for 30 heaters. You owe us for 30 heaters. They're completely ignoring the fact that my clients had no staff to rely on. They had no working heaters. They had no one to call. They fired all of the people, and they weren't getting the heaters that they needed, and the weather was getting worse.
So your client was a dissatisfied customer, no question, or there seems to be evidence of it. One of the virtues of the UCC is that it provides settled expectations among contracting parties dealing with the transactions involving the sale of goods about what their rights are and what they should do when something goes wrong and what they have to do in order to preserve certain rights. And I'm looking for, it wasn't developed in your brief, I'm looking for some legal authority that says complaining about those sorts of things is rejection under the UCC.
Your Honor, my position, I believe that the law is clear that rejection is an issue of fact. And my clients not only are saying these heaters aren't good.
I know what you're saying. I hear your argument. I'm looking for a legal principle that supports your argument that complaining is rejection. Okay. Do you have one?
No, Your Honor, not off the top of my head. When you have a heater that will not turn on, it is in fact not a heating element, and that is a problem. And so when you're saying you cannot make the thing that I bought from you work, I'm done with this. I believe that that would be a rejection, because whether or not something is rejection is an issue of fact. And we're just asking this court to reverse and remand to allow the circuit court to look at all of these things that are factual issues that happened between July and November 18th.
So let me ask about mitigation.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Heber says there's no evidence in the record as to what the value of those 13 remaining heaters were that were there. We know that they were being sold for $69,000 apiece. He might be right. Maybe there isn't value. Maybe there's scrap value. Did you put on evidence to create an issue of fact in terms of what those 13 remaining furnaces, heaters were, the value of those?
Well, Your Honor, yes and no. I mean, there was evidence that my client said, go ahead and sell those heaters. There was evidence that my client was basically a middleman selling those heaters to other customers. So to say that they were custom built for thermal isn't an accurate statement, because thermal was essentially middlemaning them to other customers in the oil field. So for Anderson to say that there was no market for it, I don't think that that's accurate. But also, my clients weren't in possession.
I know you think that's not accurate, but are there facts in the record that would suggest that there's a market for these outside of selling them directly to you?
Specifically regarding the market, no. But also, Your Honor, the problem is that at the time that the contract or the non-contract or that the agreement fell apart, the heaters weren't functioning. So I don't know how we could...
Then why did they show up in November and try to pick the one up that wouldn't be released? Thermal Intelligence sent the truck to go get it to Webster. So why did they show up to get the heater? If they weren't any good at all?
Your Honor, that is a great question, and that's why I would submit that there are issues of fact in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. That will conclude our October court term here at the law school.